Hello, I'm Will Stein, and welcome to Geography Island Jams. This podcast is in the same style as the BBC Radio 4 Desert Island Disc series, whereby each episode I ask my interviewee what 8 songs, book, and luxury item they would want to take with them if they were stranded on a desert island. For rights reasons, the music has not been included in the podcast. You can find links to the 8 songs on the LSE Geography and Environment website. I hope you enjoy. Today with me, I have Mark Justin. LSE geographers may already know Mark as the bell ringer at our annual Geography and Environment Winter Ball, but he's in fact the founder and the owner of Le Gothique, which is the gastropub which hosts our ball each year. Mark founded Le Gothique in 1987, meaning it's providing everything from pints to wedding celebrations for 33 years. The restaurant is located inside the Royal Victoria Patriotic Building, which is in Wandsworth and commonly known as London's hidden gem. Before starting Le Gothique, Mark served as a factory accountant at Philips Electronic Colour TV factory in Croydon. Whilst at the factory, he was credited for his idea to close off the factory early on Fridays as it stopped the production of the faulty Friday TV. So welcome, Mark.
Hello there.
To kick things off, can you tell us more about what it was like growing up in Southwest London? And are there any particular memories which you remember?
I think the thing that I remember or think of more, that if you grew up in Southwest London and you were around in the 60s in Clapham and Battersea, Wandsworth, every street was your playground, and your neighbours' children, you played football with them, and the front door was the goalpost, and their front door on the opposite side of the road was the goalpost. And people think, well, how on earth did you do that? Because you'd have got run over. In the 60s, there were no cars parked in the roads. You know, you could play football crossways from number 16 to number 19 on the other side of the road all day long, and you would probably have to stop playing once or twice because a car would go down the road. Now, that's an amazing thought for everyone of your age to think that we're playing kickball, we're playing football, we're playing cricket in the streets of Wandsworth, Battersea, Clapham, London, because there are no other parked cars. There's no parked cars. That was quite, you know, I remember when my father came home with the first car, and the whole family waited up to see him come home with our first car. Wow, we're going to have a car, you know. That's incredible. But you didn't have cars in the streets and parked, and you didn't have them going down the road. And that, I think, is the memory that I carry forward into the present day, where you can't, you know, it cost me, where I'm living right now in Battersea, it cost me £261 not to park my car outside the house, because it's a miracle if I can ever get that near.
Can you now tell me about your first song?
First song, Dax Entertainment, is, I mean, every single one of the songs that you're going to hear, I've had the privilege through my long and illustrious life of actually to meet most of the artists. I remember, you know, being with Paul Weller in Woking, where he was born and was from, and them singing this song acoustically, and just blew my mind. It's strangely, Dax Entertainment was never a single in the UK, only reissued on, and it was an album track, but it would have been a number one single if it had ever been released.
Can you tell me more about your time working for the Philips Colour TV factory?
Well, I mean, as a graduate, I'm arriving at the Philips Colour TV plant in Croydon as a computer literate graduate, the first of their kind, you know. So when I got there, believe me, there were teams of people with huge leather bound ledgers opening them up and recording the cost of every component in the colour television. So I arrived fresh out of university, and with my Apple Mac, you know, the first generation one, it took me some time to get all the components. So there was a lead time. I put all the components, every resistor, every capacitor, you know, starting with the frame of the television, the TV, right down to the smallest thing. And eventually, and there was lots of different televisions in the range, eventually had every TV and every component costed in the television for the factory where we were at. And having done that, sadly, everyone else in the accounting department got made redundant. So my efforts in computerizing the cost and management side of colour television, I belatedly realized was the result of an entire department of 20 people being made redundant. So they used to think of me as, when I arrived at the factory, I was, oh my God, all our jobs are at risk now, because this oik from university is going to make us all redundant.
What about the Faulty Friday TVs?
We knew that from the serial number of the television, colour television, when it was made. Again, because I was the first computer literate person in the factory, I traced all of the serial numbers to televisions that were made after lunch on a Friday. So I said, look, there's one way around this, right? And that's sort of, you know, to be get on the lash and tell people, or let's just close at lunchtime on Friday. And amazingly, they put it to the blue-collar workforce and said that, would you take half an hour out of every break on every day and finish by the end of the week 3 hours early?
Oh, wow.
And they voted on it and said, no, we'd rather work more Monday to Thursday and finish at 1 o'clock or on a Friday. And at a stroke, all of the 40 Friday televisions were disappeared.
Can you now tell me about your second song?
So the second song is, I'm a big Beatles fan and I collect Beatles memorabilia, as people who know me very closely will realise. The difficult things, you know, I've got to think outside the zone. And the reason why I'm thinking for Hey Bulldog, which is an obscure track only available on the Yellow Submarine album, which half of it is orchestral music from the release of the 1968 film, and the other half has a very limited amount of original material. There's one standout track of original material only on side two of the album, and it's the John Lennon vocal of Hey Bulldog, with, very interesting, the only song written by the Beatles with lead bass. So the song is carried by the bass driven line, as opposed to George Harrison's guitar.
Now, can you tell me more about the Le Gothic building, the Royal Victoria Patriotic building?
Yeah, the building the restaurant has operated from since 1980, since I've been there, was built, you know, over 160 years ago now, as an orphanage. One of my absolute missions in life is to explain to everyone who comes to visit, and I was keen to point this out to all LSC people who came to the geography ball, that it was not a loony bin. And the reason why you think it's a loony bin, other people, is because it was called the Royal Victoria Patriotic Asylum. Now, the word asylum, it means place of refuge, e.g. orphanage asylum. It doesn't mean loony bin, you know. And so I'm in this one-man battle to stop people thinking that the Royal Victoria Patriotic Building, where the restaurant is housed, was a former insane asylum. No, it's not. It was a former orphanage.
So, Mark, can you now tell me about your third song?
Oh, my third song, Moondance. So I found this girl, and she was mad nuts about Van Morrison. And I had to admit, I knew about Gloria and Please Don't Go, but I didn't know the more sensual kind of, you know, Moondance kind of things. And so this was the song that launched me into being a big Van Morrison fan. He's got 42 studio albums out, but for me, this was the one, you know.
Do you have a favourite type of event? As you're saying, weddings, bar mitzvahs, you've got the beer festivals which happen.
I mean, last year, 2019, that's just gone, right? One of the beautiful things about that is that we did an 18th birthday, which is quite rare, because a lot of bars and restaurants bat off that. So I did an 18th, I did a 21st. Then we did, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60. I'm thinking, this is good. And then we had a 100th birthday, which was planned. And I was really worried that she'd peg out before we got there. So, you know, and then I filled in with a 70th, 80th. And at one stage, hold on, I said, we're going to do the set here. We've got 18, 21, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100. And they were all booked and they all happened in 2019.
Wow.
And I can't think of any other restaurant that would have had a year that had every significant birthday catered for in that year. And that one of the great stories was, I was most worried, obviously, about the 100th birthday. And this woman was an amazing, and she was the mother to seven boys. Seven boys. And the seven boys were obviously, the seven sons were organising the 100th. And they were very, very, they wanted to get everything to be perfect, as you would imagine. But they had lots of meetings with me, but never with the 100th, because she was, you know, it was good. And they one day, they took me to one side, they said, Mark, we think from your brow that you're worried about this booking. And I, without saying, yes, I really am, let me tell you, Mark, we've thought about it as well. If she dies, we're still going ahead. And I was, oh my God, thank you so much for saying that. It's taken a real thing. Because they booked this in about, you know, 9-10 months in advance. I thought, we've got 10 months to go before her 100th birthday, and we might not get there. But the seven sons put my mind at rest and said, it will take place regardless. And she was there, and she was amazing, and the whole thing took place, yeah.
Wow. Can you now tell me about your fourth song?
Well, as I said earlier, you know, in my long and illustrious career at the restaurant, I have been graced with meeting a lot of the idols of my childhood, of which the Rolling Stones are one. And I've actually met the Rolling Stones. And this, The Sympathy for the Devil, is an amazing track. It's always my favourite. But, you know, for me, now I'm 60 and they're 70 and 80. I think they're role models for people like myself, that we used to think that getting old was being 60. Now, you know, if the Rolling Stones are making, you know, 80 look 50, you know, they redefine the definition of what it is like to be getting old. And, you know, having had the privilege of meeting someone like Keith Richards, the man is a legend, you know. I mean, I'll tell you, I mean, he's very together, I'm telling you. You know, he's very well read. He has a house in Connecticut, which he lives in half the year, and the other half the year he lives in West Wittering. And in West Wittering, he's got a house that he's owned since 1967. And in this house, you would think, oh, it's Keith Richards, it's rock and roll. And it's got one of those libraries with books from the floor to the ceiling that you need a ladder that's on wheels that you can go to the top level to get the books down. And that's Keith Richards' library in West Wittering.
You know, Mick Jagger went to LSE.
Yes, that's right. He never completed the degree. Yes. But and then he received an honorary doctorate, didn't he? Late in the 80s, I think. Yeah.
What would you say the most popular meal at the Gothicas?
After 35 years of taking orders in a restaurant, you can answer that question only by saying what day of the week is. On a Saturday night, regardless of what's on the menu, you could have the most eclectic menu from the most unusual greens to it. And on a Saturday night in Le Gothique, in Au Provençal, which is my first restaurant, in Herne Hill, and in every restaurant across London, Saturday night is steak night. And regardless of what you put on the menu, 9 out of 10 people will order a steak. When I used to think, really get bored by that and thinking, oh, you know, unambitious, but we've got this wonderful special on here. You know. But I've just come to understand it now. And on Saturday night, people drink gin and tonic, bottle of Sancerre, and they have a steak, you know. And whatever else you put on the menu, it's irrelevant. You need to experiment Monday to Friday, but don't experiment on a Saturday.
Can you now tell me about your fifth song?
Again, Paul Rodgers, met him, been there, seen it, done it. And the voice of the man is incredible. He knocks out these heavy rock numbers as if he was 18, and he still does it today. A lot of artists who are on the heritage circuit, they sing the songs that you know, but they're in a different register because they can't get that's fully understandable. They can't hit the top C's that the song may have been written in. I mean, Paul Rodgers sings every Free song as if it was 1968 still. And All Right Now, one of the very few records that's been number one twice.
Do you cook yourself? And do you have a favourite meal?
I love cooking. You know, I understand, I've seen so many chefs and I've learned so much. So it's obviously I've picked up stuff. But I'm the first person to say there's a massive difference between a chef and a cook. And that difference is, I can cook virtually everything that's on the menu at the Gothic. If I decide to cook it in the day and I get all the ingredients and that's all I'm doing, you know, I've got one thing, I'm going to do one of their dishes. A difference between a cook and a chef is that the chef has got 10 things, starters, 10 main courses, 10, and he doesn't know what you're going to order. And he cooks it. And when you think about it, that's what the madness of allowing you to choose on the day, you know. So the difference is that I can cook, but I couldn't cook to order. If you're interviewing a chef or you're looking at chefs, getting them to make a dish, that's easy. Watching them in the middle of service, watching them at 8 o'clock, juggle with 10 orders coming into the kitchen, that's when you realise the guy can hack it or he can't.
Can you now tell me about the sixth song you've chosen?
The Gin Soaked Boy. I mean, Divine Comedy really is Neil handling it. It's one of those bands like Simply Red is just him. It's not, you know, and Divine Comedy is Neil handling. There is no band. There is no Divine Comedy. It's him with the bands that he gets together, whether he goes out on the road with an orchestra, with a four-piece band, or as he's done on his own. And the Gin Soaked Boy, the lyrics of this song, after you've listened to this, you've got to go down there, and the lyrics are so clever. It's genius. This is one of those songs that stands alone as a poem and take away the music. And that's why I love it so much.
Do you have a favourite place in London?
In London, yeah. I mean, I'm very lucky in that I live opposite my favourite place in London, and it's Battersea Park. So, you know, and what a joy to have this amazingly manicured public amenity on my doorstep.
Do you have a favourite place in the park?
I think, yes, there is a particular hidden place in the park that very few people know about. And it's where there is a statue, a bronze statue, and it's called the Statue of the Brown Dog. And the brown dog is a bronze statue which is hidden in the park because it actually started a riot in about 1920 when anti-vivisectionists were trying to bring about the end to experiments on animals. And the brown dog is a monument, is a sculpture to stop vivisection, you know, and to stop. But of course, it was very contentious in the early part of the century that people thought they had to experiment on animals to further science. And the sculpture of the brown dog, bronze statue, is in the park, and there's a hell of a history. And I really recommend anyone who listens to this to go and eat and Google the brown dog and get the full story. It will be amazing. 100,000 people came to protest about the bronze statue being taken away. And it was in the at one time it was melted down. And the one that's in the park now is been recreated because the original was taken away because of all the rioting that took place in London over this issue of vivisection.
What about the world? Do you have a favourite place that you've travelled to in the world?
Well, as I think you know, but I mean, I'm very lucky that my partner Sue, she had a flat in London, and the lodger moved out, and then she was going to relet it, and then she thought, oh no, I won't relet it. I'll just sell it and get the money and buy somewhere else. And she bought a flat in Nice, in the south of France, and that has really become our second home. And I love it there more than anywhere else. Although, like most places, you get sick of it and I'm quite happy to come back to Battersea.
And then I was going to say, do you have a dream location to retire to?
It's Nice, yeah, it's the same place, yeah. I'm beginning to, after 14 years there, I probably know every street. Now, I mean, Nice is a great place. The mayor of Nice, Atrozzi, is an amazing guy, and he has declared that Nice will be the first city in the world to become totally car-free. Now, in order to do that, he's involved in a massive infrastructure. Right now, it's pretty difficult to park in this. It's pretty difficult to park in Battersea. But what he's doing is he's building incredible, like, 40-storey underground car parks where you get rid of your car at the edge of Nice. And every single street, I'm not talking about here in London where you might find an electric. Every single street in Nice right now today has not only electric charging points, but three electric cars that the mayor of Nice has financed, which he encourages you to use instead of your own car. And so they're pretty advanced in making Nice the first ever car-free city in the world.
Can you tell me about your seventh song?
So yeah. The next one is a classical track with all these pop music things. It's not classical as in Mozart. It's classical as in modern classic. And it's Michael Nyman, who's renowned for doing soundtracks to films. And it's the soundtrack, Michael Nyman's soundtrack to a film called The Cook, The Thief and His Lover, which starred Helen Mirren. And it's track number one that you want from this, which has a very, very haunting track. Again, going back to the things I said earlier, Helen Mirren in the Gothic, one of our customers. And one of the great things about my staff, if you really do find someone is one of your childhood fantasies, you know, and I just couldn't talk to her. So the manageress went up and said, look, I don't think you realise that Mark, the owner, is absolutely nuts about you. And so Helen Mirren says, well, go and get him, you know. And so she pulled up a stool at the bar and pulled up a stool for me. And then she said, Mark, I hear you're a bit of a fan, you know. So I was, oh, Miss Mirren, I am, you know, oh my God, you know, I can't, I was, oh, I'm so on. She said, go on, you've got 20 minutes, you know, what do you want to know? And so I said to her this story that had been bugging me for many years. In about, I don't know, 1978, she was in the Roundhouse in Camden in a production of The Duchess of Malfi. And in the review in The Evening Standard, it said that on the premiere night, which I was there because I was such a big fan, right? It said that there were a lot of rugger bugger types who were in the front row because they knew that the opening scene of the play, she was stark naked, and that row one was, and I said to Helen Mirren, I said, look, I was one of those rugger buggers in the front row for the opening of The Duchess of Malfi at the Camden. And she put her hand on my shoulder and she said, there, Mark, at least you bought a ticket. So, you know, if you meet one of your idols, it's wonderful to recount the story and put it in its context. So that's why she's there, that's why that film's there, and that's why that track is there.
What are your impressions of the geography environment, the students and the department?
I think, I mean, you've got, there's something I don't think even you realise, that, you know, that it's wonderful having the students from the LSE, and what the special attraction, my son did a geography degree. And so what I love about you guys, I try and transport myself. Oh, so this was what it was like when he was doing his degree, you know, all these people. So, you know, and also the thing that to this day that I have with my son who has a geography degree is his total inability to tell me any capital city. And so the layman's point of view, what? You've got a degree in geography. Well, you know, what's the capital of Iran then? You know, ooh, I have no idea, you know. Oh, what's the capital of Bangladesh? You know, no idea. And so he goes, oh, dad, it's not about capital cities. It's about infrastructure and it's about sustainability and it's about, you know, I said, yeah, but you still don't know any capital city of the 214 countries recognised by the United Nations. I want to know all 214 capital cities if you've got a geography degree or it's not a geography degree.
Oh, you're going to upset a few people with that one, Mark, but it's true. No, we do get that quite a lot.
I mean, his end of year thesis at Plymouth being a naval base in the Second World War was very heavily bombed. And as such, he tries to show that the fathers of the rebuilding of Plymouth had two choices. And on the table in Plymouth in 1948-49, at the end of the Second World War, was an amazing grid system that would have put Plymouth on the map like New York. And that the council at Plymouth rejected it and just did ad hoc developments and turned and made it into the hodgepodge that it is. It's a hodgepodge because so much was lost due to bombing, but there was, and his thesis was about you could have made Plymouth one of the. So he said, that's what geography's about, Dad. It's not about capital cities.
And then now we're moving on to your eighth and final song.
Oh, yeah. It's the eighth and final song for a reason, because if you're my age, you start to think of your limited lifespan, and that question does come up, you know. And this song by George Harrison, All Things Must Pass, is the song I want played at my funeral. So anyone out there, you know, knows that this is it. I'm telling you in advance, it is the all-time greatest song for someone of my age, and that's what I want played at my funeral. There you go.
As you know, you're allowed to take the Bible, the Beveridge Report, and a book of your choice. Do you know what the Beveridge Report is?
The Beveridge Report is what the start of the NHS.
Yeah, it was produced by one of the LSE directors.
Oh, I see. Right, amazing.
Yeah, so I thought it was a nice change.
Did you know that when the Beveridge Report came out, it was the big question today, as was yesterday and will be tomorrow, is the funding of the NHS. Do you know that in that original Beveridge Report, he said that the funding would need to be put in place, but that it probably would go down year on year, the money needed, because the health of the nation would be so improved once the NHS was up and running, that the costs would actually go down year on year. I mean, I think that's such a wonderful thought, that the creation of the NHS, that Beveridge himself thought that we'd all be so healthy that it'd actually be self-financing. And of course, it's grown into this incredible monster that it is, but it's a monster, it's the most fantastic thing ever, you know. We're the only country with the NHS, long may it live. But I just love the idea that he thought that it would actually get cheaper year on year.
Oh, I didn't know that, Mark.
Oh, you see, learn stuff from me.
Yeah. But then on that note, can you tell us about the book you take to accompany the Beveridge Report?
Oh, the book, it has to be The Mayor of Casterbridge by Thomas Hardy. The first work of fiction that I ever cried my eyes out after reading. The story of the Mayor of Casterbridge is a story of rags to riches to rags. And incredibly, those of you know who've been to the Gothic, we're off Trinity Road. Would you believe it? Thomas Hardy lived in Trinity Road between 1878 and 1881, which was just before he wrote The Mayor of Casterbridge. So I know that he's associated with the West Country and Dorchester and his theoretical places, but he actually came. This is, I love this bit. Thomas Hardy came to take the heirs of Tooting, and just imagine that the Gothic, the Royal Victoria Patriotic Building, the long straight road that's Trinity Road that goes from Wandsworth Bridge all the way to Tooting. Imagine that as complete open countryside, and Thomas Hardy, the author of Mayor of Casterbridge, coming there to write The Mayor of Casterbridge to get away from it all because of the clean air and what a lovely place.
And finally, can you tell me what your luxury item would be?
Well, I'm not sure if it's allowed or even makes any sense, but my luxury item would have to be a radio. But I don't know whether on the island when you get a signal.
So you're not allowed to have anything which gives you external contact?
Oh, okay. Well, blimey, I haven't thought this through now. Now you've really thrown me.
But you're on the spot.
Okay, then if it's quite simple, then if it's no external contact and it's luxury item, it's going to be a big bumper box of chocolates.
Well, thank you very much, Mark. It's been an utmost pleasure.
Okay, and thank you very much. I've loved every moment of it.